Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I start and don't finish. Whenever I start and don't finish it, there's no set schedule. I just, whenever I start and don't finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed. For everyone wondering, no, I didn't finish the book that I'm going to be reviewing today. Joining me is Juliana. Hey, say hello, Juliana.
Hello.
And Juliana did not even start this book. Why didn't you start this book?
I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, well, I just asked you to come on here because we're going to be talking about the Doomsday Book by Connie Willis. But first, a little bit. We're coming up to episode number 250 and we were wondering, hey, what should we do about episode number 250? And a while ago, someone actually said, hey, for episode 250, for the special episode, you should review, was it Ready Player One by, who's it by? Ernest Cline or something
yes.
like that? And I was like, oh, no, don't do that. But actually now Juliana's read it and Juliana now has to convince me to read the book. Go for it.
Oh, wow. Maybe you can give me some help out there, you listeners, because I read it. And I enjoyed it.
You read the German translation?
I read the German ebook, yes. And although, when I started it, I asked Luke, hey, Luke, when was that book written? I thought it was written in the 90s or something.
No, it's super recent.
Because for me, that book was very, very much like a young adult's book, like a very much like a young adult's science fiction adventure book.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the style of how it's written. And so I thought, okay, well, it was written in the 90s with all the cool stuff from the 80s and stuff in it. Turns out, no, it wasn't. Turns out it was written in when? 2011
or something. Yeah, it's very recent.
Very recent.
But the reason I wasn't going to read it because it comes out as an audiobook and it's narrated by, as the audiobook was narrated by, oh, what's his name? Will Wheaton. And I listened to his audiobook narration of Redcoats. No, not Redcoats.
Redskins.
Redshirts. And Redshirts was not a great book. Could have been better, but the narration was one of the things that really, really I didn't like about it. So I was like, I'm never going to listen to this audiobook, but maybe I'll get around to reading the ebook one day. I don't have any really bad things to say. Like, I mean, I've not read it. I haven't heard amazing things about it, except loads of people say, oh, it's really great. It's got lots of reference in it. Anyway, so if you want me to read that, Juliana's already read it, so we could do a joint review. That's another thing. But that won't be episode number 250. There is a listener group discussion on the SFBRP listener group on goodreads.com where someone said, hey, episode 250, what should we do? And the only suggestion that I saw, although we're at sea at the moment, 2 days at sea with no internet, so a few days ago, the last update that I saw there was someone saying, hey, how about listing your top five, another top five thing, a top five science fiction movies and go in depth about your top five science fiction movies. I don't think that's a very good idea. We did top fives for episode 250, lots of top five and listener top fives. So if anyone's got any better ideas for a 250 episode 250 special episode, whatever you want to say, what have you got? You got an idea?
Yeah, but picking up that top five science fiction movies, we just recently watched Guardians of the Galaxy.
Very good.
Would you think that would be in there?
No, it wouldn't be in there. No, because, I mean, it's a really fun movie. I really liked it. For science fiction, I want there to be a little bit more science fiction. There are spaceships in there and there are aliens.
Oh, there's a lot of science fiction.
But it's more of a science fiction / fantasy adventure story, whereas a science fiction movie, I would want it to be a bit more based on something science fiction-y, like a time travel. It's sort of like about the time travel, and Total Recall is about memories and about that kind of thing. It's like there's some kind of basis in a scientific idea.
Yeah, but would you then say The Fifth Element is not a science fiction?
The Fifth Element and Guardians of the Galaxy, I think they're both fantastic movies, really, really good fun, but both of them are kind of adventure movies where there's a MacGuffin, like, okay, you have to get there and get this thing. It's and that there are spaceships involved and that they go to other planets is incidental to the, hey, there's this proper noun thing and you've got to go and get the proper noun thing and have adventures along the way. Unlike, say, Total Recall, it's like, get your ass to Mars. Sure, you're going to Mars, but the whole thing is about implanted memories. The whole thing revolves around a science fiction idea or a science fiction concept rather than there is this powerful stone, we've got to get this powerful stone, which is the same there's this element, we've got to get this element. It's the same in both Guardians of the Galaxy. There's this thing with power, just get that thing with power, you know.
Yeah, but then also Star Wars has much, much more of the adventure and whatever fantasy stuff in it.
In the later movies, but the first movie is about a new scientific technological progress. There is a Death Star. The Death Star is a new weapon. It starts off with them going, where are the plans for the Death Star? The Death Star is a new science fictional invention of a starship which is big enough to destroy a planet. And that sets in motion all of the story. All of the story comes from, in Star
I'm talking
Wars,
about
a new episode 4, A New Hope. It starts with the starship is completed, the demonstration of the starship. The starship completely
wipes out
a planet. But not only that, that is the new political order is based on the fear of the Death Star. It's all about a new science fictional development, a new technological scientific military development. And everything that plays through, it plays through, and then the solution to it is the destruction of this new scientific, technological, military invention. And that's the end of the story. It starts with a scientific invention, it ends with the end of that science fiction invention. And that there is... the Force and mysticism and stuff like that, that's just background to actually a very strong science fiction story. I don't get it when people say it's just science fantasy. Of course, later on, I think in the Return of the Jedi and Empire Strikes Back, and later on, yes, it does often become just an adventure through space. But I do think that I do think that Star Wars gets a short shrift as a very good science fiction story, because, like I say, science fiction is interesting. I mean, this is one of the definitions of science fiction, sort of like you have a world, you introduce a new scientific or technological advance, and then you... and then you see how things play out. You see how it changes the world. You know, that's the classic science fiction. Or you get somebody who comes across, or some scientific thing or technological thing affects their life in some way, and you see how it plays out.
Ready Player One is really a science fiction book.
I'm not saying science. It isn't a science fiction.
Your definition.
It's not my definition. It is a definition. But I don't think there's any definition that you can give science fiction which the first Star Wars movie doesn't hold up under. Even though there's some mysticism, that's fine. Anyway, so I probably don't want to do... Hey, we've just done the episode now. Okay. We probably won't talk about science fiction movies for a whole episode. But if anyone's got any other ideas that they want of episode 250, let's get onto today's book. Shall we do it?
Okay.
Okay, you're just on here to ask questions when I'm talking about this, because I haven't actually finished a whole book, and so I can't really do the normal structure of like, oh, this is the book, this is when it was written, because normally I look up stuff on Goodreads or on Wikipedia and see when it was written and things like this, but we don't have internet access at the moment, because it costs 75 cents per minute when we're on a cruise ship, and I just can't bring myself to open an account and spend that much money just checking emails and stuff, so... So yes, what I started this way before I started doing this Hugula Award series, reading books that like a single novel which won both the Hugo Award and the Nebula Award for the same book. It's difficult to say it won it in the same year, because so often it'll win the Hugo on one year and the Nebula on a different year, like the previous year.
Or the next year.
Yeah, the previous year, next year, because you get the 2014 Hugo Award for a book that was published in 2013, but you get the 2013 Nebula Award for a book that was published in 2013.
Ah,
you know, so the Hugo Awards are often...
It is kind of in the same year then again.
Yeah, it's kind of the same year. It's just what the number... Like I say, the Nebula Award, the name... Like, the number of the year on the Nebula Award is for when the book is published. And the Hugo Award is the year award for when the award was given, but only books published in the previous year are eligible. Does that make sense?
I understand.
Okay. So, we've just had the 2014 Hugo Awards, but they were for books published in 2013. I don't know exactly when the cutoff is, but it's the same with the Oscars as well. You know, you get the Oscars at the end of the year, but you have that kind of, like, 12, 13 months of movies previously to choose from, because depending on when they were released, in which country were they released, and for how long they were released, and how many screens they were released, you know. So it's a similar kind of thing. So Doomsday Book was released in... it won the 1993 Hugo Award. So I'm guessing it was released in 1992. However, it didn't just win the Hugo Award. It was tied for the winner of the Hugo Awards. The other winner was A Fire Upon the Deep by Verna Vinge. And if we're talking top five science fiction movies, this is one of the top five books, like my top five science fiction books, was, because, you know, when we did that episode 250,
yeah,
this is one of those books which is always, you know, it's always kind of coming in and out of my top five, because I think it is one of the best science fiction books written in the 1990s, at least. You know, it is a very, very, very good introduction to science fiction, or not a good introduction, but like if you were going to wrap up, okay, what was science fiction in the 1990s, you could put this book out there and be like, yeah, that's it. Or what was science fiction like in the last 30 years of the, you know, or, you know, within the last 30 years, what is going to be one of the best science fiction books in the last 30 years? A Fire Upon the Deep should be up there. It should be one of those books which is, it's like important. It's it, but it's also, it's just really good as well. don't read the sequel. No, do read the sequel. There's another book called A Deep in the Sky. Read that one, which isn't a sequel, it's actually a prequel. Don't read Children of the Sky, or whatever it was called, by Children of the something. Anyway, I read that. Awful, awful, awful book. Don't read the follow-up. Read the prequel, which was written afterwards. So yeah, Fire Upon the Deep. So if I'm going to actually say in my own brain which book won the Hugo Award in that year, I would say Fire Upon the Deep. Doomsday Book. I just don't know how it got a look in. But also, it won the Nebula Award in 1992, yeah, so that's the same kind of thing. So 1992, yeah. Nebula Award, 1993 Hugo Award. And there is actually a year where there was four winners. There was four Hugo and Nebula Award winners. There was, in 1966, there was This Immortal by Roger Zelazny, also called And Call Me Conrad, won the Hugo Award, tied with June, which also won the Hugo Award, by Frank Herbert. In the same year, in 1966, Flowers for Algernon won the Nebula Award, and Babel 17 by Samuel R. Delaney, and someone else, but for some reason it's been cut off. I don't know. I'll have to look at that list. And so it also won the Nebula Award. So 1966, there were actually four Hugo and Nebula Award winners.
There were four Hugolos.
No, they weren't, because Hugo has to win
different,
both.
Yeah.
Dune did win both, but it won the 1965 Nebula and the 1966 Hugo.
Okay.
But then there was three other books which won the Hugo and Nebula Awards in 1966. Anyway, so we have a book here, and I would say Doomsday Book somehow won both of these. And I think the Nebula Award is voted by other authors, and I think, you know, Connie Willis had just had a lot of friends or something. She's probably quite a nice person, and she's got a lot of fans. I just don't understand how this book could win. And I know it's weird to say that, like, start off right here at the start of the review and just saying this book is awful, but this book is just awful. It's just terrible. I'm not kidding. For all of the books that I've ever read or ever tried to read, this is probably the worst. And I'm including the Dune prequels in this one as well. And Hunters of Dune or something that I started reading, which I gave 0.5 stars. I'm including...
What about this homo...
Hominids. No, Hominids is way more interesting than this book, way more exciting than this book. Yeah, really. And I know it pains me to say this, but it's better written. What's the other one? I'm going to bring up the list. Oh, no, I'm not connected to the internet. Oh, of course I'm not connected. all of these other books, like Snow Crash is better than this. I got to the end of Snow Crash. You know, all of these other books. You had similar opinions of Snow Crash than I did,
yeah.
I think. Probably not quite as bad. But all of these books, which are now sort of like people go, oh, these are rant-tastic reviews. They're amazing reviews. I can't even rant properly about this book because it is so shit. It's just one of those books that, and like I said before, this is why I was introducing it. Going back 5 minutes in the conversation, well before I started trying to read all of the Hugo Awards, this is one of the most recommended books for me. Loads of people said, hey, check out the Doomsday Book. So I downloaded the audiobook version of it, and it's from Audible, and it's read by Jenny Sterling, and I just really didn't like her reading of the book. And I was thinking, well, how much of this is me not enjoying the reading of the book, and how much of it is the book is just terribly written and just really, really boring and tedious to get through? So how much was it? And so I thought, maybe I'll just stop. So I got through, you know, about 2 hours of it, and just thought, this is just awful. I couldn't get through. This is years ago, and thought I would just never get back to it again. And I thought, oh, maybe if I do get back to it again, I'd read it as a paper book or an ebook. But it's a big, chunky book. It's like 24 hours or something like that of audiobook listening to. That's like 600 pages, 700 pages, or whatever. It's a big book. There's some authors who I'll go, yeah, I don't mind, like Peter F. Hamilton, right? I don't mind that this book is split into two parts and each part is 24 hours long and it's going to take me 48 hours to listen to this audiobook. I don't mind because I know I'm in good hands. Connie Willis, I don't know. This is the first thing I've ever read by her, except for maybe one or two short stories. I don't know. So I thought I'd never get back to it. And then when I started this Hugula Award, one of the main reasons why I was like, oh, shall I do the Hugula series, read all the 26 books, novels which have won both the Hugo Award and the Nebula Award, and I thought, I'll do it. And then I thought, oh no, that means I've got to read Doomsday Book, actually read it. But it turns out I don't have to read it, because there's some other books which I realised, like American Gods, which I started and just thought, this book is not for me, and didn't finish. And Among Others, which I started and thought, this book is this terrible. Actually, Among Others, way better than this book, even though I didn't. I actually got halfway through that. I thought, well, these books, I'll get halfway through, and if I don't like it, I won't. What I decided to do this time is that this book is a time travel book with some stuff set in the modern day. I say modern day, it feels the most ancient modern day I've ever read. This book is written in 1992, and it's like I think there's a computer, but there's no idea that there's going to be any other new technology. The people are going around this college, and they're like, "Oh, do you have a phone? No, I can't find a phone. Can they contact me for a phone?" And it's just so weird to read a book which is a science fiction book, and this is meant to be set in the future where they have time travel going on, and yet you're like, "Well, I know mobile phones in 1992, not a lot of people had mobile phones, but they at least existed." You'd think that in the future more people would have mobile phones.
Oh yeah, that's big boxes to walk around with.
Yeah, but you'd think that, like,
Dad had one.
You're just in the science fiction, like Star Trek communicators. If you go away from someone, you can still have a conversation. And this whole of this future seems to be wrapped up in, like, oh, do you have a telephone? No, do you have a telephone? How do we get hold of this person? Oh, they went on holiday. Why are they going on holiday? Well, we can't find track of them. Oh, they went down to London on a shopping trip. Well, why are they going to London? Well, it's almost Christmas. Well, let's get them. Where's this person? Well, it's almost Christmas, they've gone home. Ah, well, make a list here. Let's get the name down. And where are you? Well, I'm going to hurry. Don't go too far away from the phone. Okay. And it's just this whole thing. I'm just like, what the fuck? You've got time travel and you've got universal translators, but you don't have mobile phones. And I know that's just weird because we now live in the future when from this was written. This was written in 1992 or 92, 93, whatever. And it's just such a big disconnect that I can't believe that I'm reading future. I can't believe that I'm reading science fiction. It's like this farce, and all of the farce just comes from, how do I do the mobile phone thing, you know? And it's now in movies, whenever they need to get in contact with someone, it's just like they look at the phone and go, damn it, no signal, and they just smash their phone to the ground and run off, and they have to do the running thing to get in contact with someone rather than just the calling. And you just think, well, how many stories don't work if mobile phones exist? And this is a story that wouldn't work if a mobile phone exists. But it's not even like, oh, and they looked at the mobile phone, the mobile phone network went down, and now we can't do it. None of that. It's just like, mobile phones don't exist. No personal communication devices exist. And people looking at the watch, it's just, she looked at her digital. And I'm like, is that a digital watch? Like, looking at a digital, like, on the wrist. And I'm thinking, what is the digital? Like,
Think it might be communicated?
No, I don't know what it is, because it's not. Maybe it's described later on, but she looks at a digital, and like, a digital watch, I don't know. Because the thing is, this time when I started reading it through, I was like, I'm going to skip all of the really, really shit Mr. Dunworthy, who, it's just all these characters who are all like, and this is Mary, and this is Mr. Dunworthy, and this is Mr. Squibble, and this is Mr. Boodley-Dith, and this is, and it's all like this kind of like English farce kind of setup where people call each other owners. Ooh, well, I went over here and I missed them, and you went in that door when I came in, I came out that door just as you went in this door, and we missed each other. Oh, we just missed each other like that. And it's like, this kind of worked in the theatre. It works as a shit TV show, like as a sitcom TV show, when you're actually reading about people, oh, and this person went that person, and this person came this one, and this person jumped over the fence, and this person took the train down into London, and this person took the train across this way, and it's just, oh, so boring. This time I thought, well, I'll skip all of the modern day stuff, and I'll just stick with the medieval things. I did this in another book
So the time travel is always going backwards?
No, there is no time travel. Well, there is time travel, but it doesn't seem to be a time travel story. There's this, you know, in time travel, you go back, you change the past, and then you come back to the future again, and everything's different.
Back to the future.
It's the standard thing, you know, like all of these things, go back, change the past, come back, and it's different. There is a rule written into this time travel that you can only go back to a place where, if you go back there, a paradox can't happen. You can't change the future again. And if
you
go,
do you know that?
Well, it's something called the time slip. So if you go back to a place where the the future could be changed, it'll go, no, you can't go there, we'll send you to this other place, and if you go there, the future won't be changed, you can go back there without causing any harm.
How could that happen?
It's just the way the universe works. It's just the universe sorts itself out that you can do time travel, but you can only go back in time and do something if nothing in the future can ever be affected. So what we're doing is we're taking one of the key conceits of time travel, changing the past to affect something in the future, or changing the now, and in the future things will be different. And that's all just removed. So think
because
of a time travel...
Because right, what, when you at the point when you go back in the past, you already changed it.
Yes, but the point is that there's this thing called a time slip, which it just sorts itself out so you can't change it.
Okay. Interesting?
No, it's not interesting. It's the opposite of interesting. It's boring. So people go back to the past and seem to have an adventure, and you can't see, people listening, you can't see, but they have an adventure. My fingers are almost dropping off from doing the quote, scare quotes, go back in time and have an adventure. So what I thought, I'll just go back and read the adventure in the past and see what happens in the past. Now, okay, so you go back to 14th century, go back to like 1320, like the year 1320, around about Christmas. Just, Juliana, just off the top of your head, say something interesting that could happen if you go back to the 1320. Anything at all. You go back and you meet...
I don't know.
Anything off the top of your head. Medieval people. Who's an interesting medieval person who you could meet? Not a specific name, but just like any kind of medieval person that you could meet.
A merchant.
A merchant. No merchants in this. Okay.
Some court people.
Some court people. No court people in this at all.
Some farmers?
Farmers. Okay, we're getting down to the level of what is interesting about this book. She goes back in time and she gets an illness. Oh, that's what's happening in the modern world. People are ill and they're like, oh, where did this illness come from?
Now I understand, because there must be because of how you said it now, there wasn't a purpose for that. But of course, the purpose of time travel is to solve the illness in the past.
Not even that. The purpose of the time travel is just to observe the past. And when you come back and say, oh, well, these are the clothes that they wore in 1320, and these are the kind of houses that they were in 1930.
So it's just like a history lesson.
It's just a history lesson. You go back in time. It's a history student, goes back in time. There is no story except what is history? What is it going to be like?
Is that writer a history professor?
I don't care. I literally don't give a shit. I don't have the Wikipedia page. Connie Willis is not an author. Like, this is one of the things that normally, if I don't read the end of the book, I'll go on Wikipedia and spoil it for myself. I'll read what happens before the end of the book. You know, as it goes on, what is the solution to... I don't want to read what happens at the solution to this adventure, but I'll spoil it for me just to find out what happens. I don't give a shit that I don't have internet access at the moment, because there is no adventure that is happening. I'm a quarter of the way through this book, and I'm listening to every single word, not of the... You know, I'm skipping forward. I mean, I'm doing a fast forward, like 30 seconds. Skip going, you know, listening through very quickly through the modern day stuff just to get to back to the past sections again, where she goes back into the past. Nothing is happening. Like, there is no adventure.
Maybe it comes now. Maybe
I don't, just... but I can't wait, because there is no... Look, let me get to my notes here. Let me get through some of these notes. So she goes back in time, and there's this place where there's the drop. So she gets dropped off in a place, and it's like in 2 weeks' time she's got to get back to that place.
Okay. Well, that's normal
time travel thing. Okay, I understand that she's got to get back there, because then they can look through the grid and see her and pick her up if she's needed. But she gets there and she gets an illness that she actually didn't pick up. It's not the Black Plague or anything like that. It's not a plague in the 14th century.
It's not an illness from
It's an illness from like somewhere in New Jersey or South Carolina. I can't remember exactly where it comes from.
How did she get that?
When she got it in the modern day, and as soon as she turns up, she's already got the illness. She takes back an illness, but it's not going to affect the future.
I just wanted to say,
no, it can't. No, it doesn't. She doesn't give it to anyone. Well, even if she does, it doesn't, because the way that the time slip works, it can't affect the past. So it's just about how is she going to survive? So she's there. She collapses. Someone on a horse picks her up and takes her back to this little manor house. Not a court. You know, I'm not talking knights and queens and kings or anything. We're talking about like really, really poor, like, aristocrat people who are kind of like, oh, what's happening with them, don't know, but they're living in a house, but they don't have any servants or anything like that. So they're living there, and so let me just hear. Oh yeah, Doomsday Book. So what the worst thing about this, I say one of the worst things about this book, is that there's no skipping forward in time. If nothing interesting happens, we read about it.
Yeah, this is obviously what you're meant to do.
No, you're not meant to do this. This is the worst, right? This is why the book is a 24-hour audiobook. It's because it goes, and then she went here, and she put one foot in front of the other, and she stepped over here, and then she went a little bit further along the track, and then she walked past this tree, and then past that tree, and then past this tree, and she walked past this tree, and then she stopped here, and she looked at this, and she thought about this, and she thought that, and she did this, and then she collapsed. She came around, and this was happening, and she went there, and it's just... Every single thought that goes through her brain while she is conscious, we are told about. Everything she eats, everything she sees, every person that comes into the room, every person that leaves the room, we describe their, like, what they're wearing, what they are, what they're listening to, like, or what they're saying, like, and then, you know, what they're doing and what their problems are and this thing and that. It's just every single little bit. And I made a note here. She went off, when she was feeling a little bit better, she was like, she goes out into the village again. 38 minutes I was listening to a story of her, literally, I could say it. She was feeling well, but she wanted to get back to the place where there's a drop. She got out and she walked through the village, and it was a terrible village. It was worn down, it was broken down houses, and she got far. She thought she was going to make it, and then she thought, well, maybe I'll make it to, I'm feeling faint. Maybe I'll make it to the church. I'm not going to make it to the church. I'll go here and I'll knock on this person's door and see if I can just go into their little hovel and sit down. And she did that. And there was a kid, and the kid went away, and then there was a rat, and it doesn't matter about that. And then she leaves again, and people find her and take her back. And there was 38 minutes to tell that story of the adventure of this whole chapter. A whole chapter was spent on her leaving the house, walking down a street, getting five hovels down the street, feeling tired, and then people coming to pick her up and taking her back to bed again. And after all of that, she's in the same position. She was ill in bed. We spent 38 minutes of her walking down the street and then being taken home again. And now she's back in bed. She's back in bed again. And I'm like, fuck this. And this is where I stop. This is where I stop. I can't go on. I can't spend 38 minutes of my life having every single step and every thought and everything that she sees. It's like, I mean, what I just said was just what happened. A good artist, a good author will be able to write the same thing, not in 38 minutes, but maybe 5 minutes of audiobook, or 10 minutes, and they would use better words, they would use better writing, they would use better language, they would do the descriptions as part of the story, they would bring in thematic elements and stuff, and you would see it from their point of view, not just literally going, oh, the house is here, they don't look very sturdy. I was told by in my history class that the houses would look like this, but they don't look like that. They look like this. And then she goes up and she knocks on the door and she's like, oh, actually, it's a little bit more sturdy than we thought the houses were. But in my history class, I was told it would be like this, but it's not like this, it's actually like this. And then she goes inside and she sits down and is like, well, I was told in my history class it would be like this, but it's not like this. It's actually like this. And I don't think it, oh, and the clothes that they're wearing is actually like that. And it's not like that, it's actually like this. And then the language that I'm using, actually the language wasn't like this. I was told it was being like this. I learned the Chaucer, I learned all this stuff, but it wasn't like that. It's actually like this. And like, it's just time and time again, we're told, oh, I was taught in my history class, and what I learned to get by in this place was like this, but now I'm here and actually it's like that. And it's like, you just say that once, like, just say yet again it wasn't how it, like I don't know, like, I can't, like, how, and how do you read, like, even if this was the material that a good author was going to write with, how do you decide that you're going to spend 38 minutes or how, what's that, like, that's like 40 pages, like 30 pages or something, how do you decide that a whole chapter of your book is going to be about someone starting in bed, leaving, coming back, and ending up in bed again and being in the same position? Like, all we saw, all we had described to us in that whole time was what the church looked like and what these little village, what the village looked like. And then we're back again. Like, a good writer could have summed that up in one paragraph, like, got across that same thing in one paragraph. I'm thinking, what am I reading here? Why, if I'm reading a history book, why isn't it just, this is what villages were like in those days? And you could write it in a lot less time rather than, this ill person is going on an adventure, and they're going to do this kind of stuff. And it's just awful. It's awful as well. I made some notes because I was listening to this morning. And here are my things. Why are we reading about an idiot? What is interesting about a stupid person doing stupid things for stupid reasons? It's like, there is no reason for it. I've got to get to the drop. I've got to find out where I was found. but she just doesn't ask people, she doesn't talk to people. And this thing with the translator, it's just like, wait until you're well, you've got 2 weeks, you'll be fine in a few minutes. Don't, like, when you're trying to do this thing, don't go outside and, by your own idiocy, make yourself catch pneumonia, because that's what happens. That is what happens. She goes out, she catches pneumonia. She meets this little kid and she's like, oh, I'm so ill, quickly go and find someone to save me. And she sees this kid and he's like really like wrangly and like really skinny and he's got these puffed up eyes and she's like, oh, he's got rickets. He's worse off than I am. She actually says that. He is worse off than I am. He is more ill than I am. And then she says, but she ordered him anyway. Go find someone to get me help. And I'm like, you monstrous bitch. Like, you see a kid who obviously is, like, you're as ill as I am. You, kid, you peasant, go find someone to look after me, and I'm going to invade your house and sit on your thing. And then there's this whole thing about a rat, and she's looking at this rat in a cage, and she's going, oh, you poor rat, you're in a cage, but you're quite nice. You're looking there, you've got bright black eyes, and you're sitting there. Maybe I should let you out. No, but I shouldn't let you out, because in the future it'll be your relatives who are going to spread the black plague, you know, your descendants, and if I let you out, maybe the plague will be worse. It won't be worse, because the time slip, there's nothing you can do to affect the future. Maybe it'll be worse. And then she's, and I'm like, I made a note, she's more concerned about the rat than the human child. And I'm like, this is awful, this person is terrible. And then,
who is she?
She's just fucking nobody, she's just a student. She's the most annoying, ignorant, stupid, like, all the time. We read things from her point of view, and she's like, oh, here, and the person who picked me up on the horse, he's my white knight, he's a scoundrel, maybe I made him up, oh, he must be in my thing. And she just keeps going, oh, maybe I'm here, maybe this is happening, maybe, and you're all, like, everybody, like, I know she's ill, I know she may be hallucinating, she's got a fever and stuff like that, but why do we read, like, whole chapters from her point of view, and she's going, well, maybe it's like that, maybe it's like this, and it's like, no, it isn't, we know the truth, and you will discover the truth, at some point you'll discover the truth, but meanwhile, we've got to listen to you describing things in excruciating details, and you're wrong, and we know you're wrong, because it's really obvious. It's like, is this meant to be clever? Like, looking at it from her point of view, it's not, it's just annoying, because she's clueless, and we're having to read everything from her point of view, 4 or 5 times, all the time. It's so pathetic.
But who is she? Does he have a name?
Her name is Catherine, but not Catherine. It's Cadric. I don't care. I don't give a shit. People call her Catherine. That's all I care about.
So, but what do you think? Why is she?
I don't know. There's no reason. She's going on a science trip. She's going on a science field trip. It's a science field trip. There is no adventure. There's nothing going on here. I got like 5 hours, 6 hours into this audiobook, and there's still no reason for her to go back except to check out what people are wearing and what the houses look like and how many things are in the fields and what the temperature is like there.
Yeah, because the only thing that she can do is nothing.
The only thing that she could do is nothing, and she's doing nothing for 38-minute long chapters at a time. So, okay.
But maybe there will be a purpose.
I don't care about the purpose in the future. I'm quarter of the way into the book and literally nothing. Look, even though, like, I was reading this book, another book that I didn't finish, another Hugo Award, among others. At least there's fairies. There's something that's like, oh, there was a car accident in her past where her sister died, and now there's fairies, and there's other things like that. Even though I didn't finish it, when I was reading through, there's at least something that, and she's talking about, she's reading lots of science fiction books in there. And I'm like, okay, this book is not for me, but I understand what people like about this. I understand that there's going to be a confrontation with the fairy godmother at the end, even though I didn't get that far. You know, I understand that there's something there. There's some kind of grip. There's some kind of drama, and this little girl in that book, she meets a guy and she kind of falls in love, and she has a teacher and she goes to the library, she's doing things, even though it's nothing that I find interesting, but I understand that there's something going on. Literally, in the Doomsday book, she arrives, she gets ill, someone picks her up, and she waits around in bed, and then she goes to a trip, and now she's back in bed again. Like, what I have said to you there is everything that has happened in the past. You know, there's things happen, like, random stuff happens along the way, but if you would have to say, halfway through, in the time travel section, what is the plot? The plot is, somebody is ill in bed, she goes for a walk, and now she's still ill in bed. That's it? Like, how can I expect any adventure from now on? Like, all of her concerns are trivial.
We were just talking at the beginning about what is a science fiction book and all.
I don't care about what science fiction. No, it has to be interesting.
Why is this then considered science fiction? Just because they have time travel?
there's time travel, and in the future, there is one other science fiction invention. The time travel stuff is just so wishy-washy. It's like, I don't even, like, it's the most wishy-washy pointless time travel ever. She's going on a science trip. Why don't they just say, we're going on a science trip? This has been done before. There's a Michael Crichton book called Timeline, which is not a very good book, but someone goes back.
Yeah, but very adventurous.
You read it? Yeah. Someone goes back, and there's jousting, and there's wars, and there's castles, and there's a cool time loop thing where he becomes his own. Well, no, he doesn't. He marries someone there, and they find his grave later on. And there's a thing about the thing, and they've got to get back to this one place, they've got the water thing, and they've got to get people in water or something. I can't remember in the Monday. I mean, it's been 20 years since I read this book, but there's stuff happening in that. There's castles and there's intrigue and stuff. She goes back on a science trip to somewhere which you will never be able to affect anything ever again, and just does nothing. Literally, she's doing nothing. Okay, the science fiction thing, there's this communicator, this interpreter thing, something. She's got an interpreter. It's not a device. It's kind of like this molecular thing that works in her brain, that augments her brain, so when people talk in a language, she can kind of then understand the language, and then when she's saying something, she lets it kind of take over her vocal cords so she can speak. There seems to be no fast rules about how this works or how well this works. But she starts off, and it's not working at all. People are speaking in old English, and she can't understand.
I think this is pretty much just so the author doesn't need to write in the old language.
Yeah, but you know what would have been better? If she'd have learnt the language, and she turned up and she knew the language, and it was a little bit difficult for her to learn because there's some different stuff, and she learnt the wrong century language or the little different region, and there is this thing where it's like this language is meant to be based more, you know, there's a mixture of French and Germanic language, the Anglo-Saxon language, and then the old English language with a bit of Latin thrown in there as well. So there is this mix, you know, you're never quite sure how much of the mix is going to be in those languages.
Yeah.
So she's obviously turned up somewhere, and it's like she speaks Spanish, but other people are speaking Portuguese. You know, it's that kind of difference. Like, you'll be able to work out a little bit, and it starts off like that, and she can't understand anything. And she's like, oh, my interpreter is broken. I'm like, great, she's now going to have to learn the language. And so it's like, is my interpreter broken? Yes, my interpreter is broken. I think my interpreter is broken. It is broken. How much can I do now with the interpreter broken? I can't do very much. I need to talk to people about getting back here. Why can't I do that? Because my interpreter is broken. Do you think my interpreter is broken? Yes, my interpreter is broken. What do I need to do about it? My interpreter is broken. I'm going to need to do this. And what do I have to do if my... And I'm not kidding you. It's this many times. It's repeated every 3 or 4 minutes about the interpreter is broken. And it's not working. And you think, okay, this is going to be the main plot. The main plot is going to be her learning about the place where she is by the broken interpreter, and she's actually going to have to find out about stuff itself. Turns out it's not broken, it just needed to listen to their language a bit, and then it starts working again. Through no effort of her own, it starts working again. Except it only starts working again so she can understand what other people are saying. But when she speaks, she's still speaking in modern English, and people then can't understand her. And so we get another chapter of her, like, being able to understand other people, and they're coming in, and this person comes in, they're talking about this, and this is how it works, and she needs to do this, but then the interpreter's talking over them, so she can't pick up the names, and then she does pick up the name, and this person's gone off to Oxford, and this person's gone off to Bath, and then this person comes here, and there's a guy who's important, and she needs to talk to about this person, and some kids come in, and the kids start talking, and the kids are talking, and she understands the kids. Fucking kids. And then just all this stuff, and then, but every time she speaks it doesn't work. And then a kid comes in and says, do you want to see my dog? And she says, yeah, I'd like to see your dog, absentmindedly. And the kid goes, okay, here's my dog. And she's like, wait, it's working for me. Oh, all I need to do is stop trying to speak. All I need to do is turn off my brain and let the interpreter take over, and then now everyone understands. So what did she do to solve all these problems? Nothing. The interpreter started working by itself because it worked out the mix of German and French that it needed to, you know, an imbalance of German and French. And then for her to actually make the interpreter work, she just needed to turn off her own conscious thought about it and just speak naturally, and it would do its job.
So she wouldn't even be able to learn the language.
No, she can't learn the language because it's being interpreted for both ways. So she's not learning anything. It's just, the interpreter's learning everything, and I'm like, is everything being... Does she have a recorder that everything's being recorded so we can, when she come back into the modern day, we'll be able to know what the modern day is? No, it seems to only function so she can feel sorry for herself and that she needs to get back to the place where the time drop was, and she needs to get back there and do that. That's the only concern she has. Her driving concern is getting back to the place where the stuff was. And I'm just thinking, don't. But all of this time, I made some notes of it, all of this time when she's talking and people are talking to her and they're asking her a question, she just repeats, she just speaks back in English and they don't understand. It's like, oh, this woman's crazy. She's obviously ill and crazy. She fell off her horse and bumped her head and now she's crazy. And they'll ask her something else and she'll reply in English and they don't understand. She's, well, you can't understand her. Where do you think she's from? From a foreign land. And I'm just like, they ask you a yes or no question. Nod your head. Put your thumb up. Like, just use sign language. Like, all of the things that are normally in books and movies where, you know, me, Tarzan, you, Jane, you know, this whole, like, this whole communication where you start from the base thing, she doesn't put any effort into that. And I understand why she doesn't put any effort into it. It's because Connie Willis, who wrote the book, has already decided that the interpreter's going to start working at the end of this chapter. She doesn't need to put any effort into it. And the miscommunication in the future times, or in the modern times, it's all about, do you have a telephone? No, I don't have a telephone. I can't get hold of you. Where are you? Well, I just jumped over this fence and I came on the train from up from London and this person's gone down. You know, all of this stupid miscommunication is where the drama comes from. In the old time, all the drama comes from, will my communicator work? I don't think it will. And it's just over and over and over again, and it's just so boring. And I was thinking, if she didn't know how the interpreter worked, I was like, didn't she practice with the interpreter? Didn't she, like, you know, have the interpreter put in her head and then talk to someone from Japan and see if it works or not, and to see, you know, if she can communicate? No, obviously didn't do any testing, no testing. All of the stuff that she learned to go back there is just pathetic. It's just all. And then the kids come in, and then the main first conversation that she has with someone is with a child. I'm like, I don't want children in my science fiction. I don't want children in anything. Like, if you're going to have a child, make it the most interesting child. Otherwise, it's a boring 8-year-old kid who is only concerned about the dog, and it's really petty. It's like, oh, I wanted to tell you that the dad had come home first, or this soldier had come home, and I wanted to be the first person to tell you, but then my brother told you, and my sister told you, and now I'm upset, but over the pettiest thing ever. And then when she goes and, you know, when Catherine goes for a walk, the kid finds her first, like, I found her, look at me, I found her. And then nasty mother-in-law comes up and says, no, child, you didn't see her. We all found her at the same time. We all spotted her. But I found her first. I was the one who came over and recognized her, and I found her first. It's like, no, child. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck who saw her first, especially if it's an 8-year-old girl who the height of her personality is that she's got a pet dog and she wants to show you a trolley. I don't give a fuck. I've listened to 5 hours of this fucking audiobook so far, and the most interesting characters are just wandering around this doughy-eyed mother who's married into a family, and she's got a mother-in-law who is like a nasty mother-in-law. I'm like, I don't give a shit about any of these characters. It's not because they're women, it's not because they're children, it's because they're fucking boring. It's because they're the most tedious characters to ever go like this. Why are we reading about an idiot? What is interesting about stupid persons doing stupid things for stupid reasons? What is the drama? I'm reading from my notes here. Where is the conflict? What is at stake? Nothing is happening. What the fuck am I listening to? I'm just reading my notes here. So boring, so boring. Why is the only source of a drama if a child found the idiot before someone else? 38 minutes into a pointless trip of the village, what's happened? Fuck all. If the author had any sky, I did that note before. And then there's these other sections where she's like, she's keeping notes as she goes along to give to Mr. Dunworthy when she gets home. That's called the Doomsday Book, extracts from the Doomsday Book. And she starts off in these little bits before, in between the chapters, like a little summary of what's happened before. I'm like, just give me the summary, that like 1 minute summary that you just gave me about what's happened in the previous chapter. That's all I needed to know about the previous chapter, that 1 minute summary. It's like, I know you can do summaries. You don't have to write every single thing that everything's happening. There's never a time when they skip forward in time. There's never a moment that isn't described in detail in the book.
Do you want to take a drink?
I don't want to take a drink. I just want to stop talking about this fucking shit book. Literally the worst book that I've tried. I mean, I've started reading other books, which I've read, and I'm just like, this book is not for me. Or I've read it and just gone, okay, no, and stopped reading, and didn't feel any compulsion. This is a Hugo Award-winning book, and a Nebula Award-winning book. I'll take away its Hugo Award and just give it to, you know, Werner Vinge. You know, he can get that one for Deepness in the Sky. Not Deepness in the Sky.
But
Fire
now
upon the
I
deep.
Actually want to know more about that book.
No, I don't!
No,
there's nothing.
I want to now read this book and see how much of that, what you think about it.
It won a Hugo Award and a Nebula Award.
Yeah, so maybe I should check it out as an ebook or paper book or
no,
whatever.
No, don't, don't. Just stay away. There is nothing here. And I'd love if any SFBIP listener has read this book and even got through to the end, explain to me how you got through to the end. Or if you liked it in any way, explain to me one thing about this book which is likable. Literally, there's nothing in it. Everybody in the future is just stupid idiots doing stupid stuff for no reason. And our main Catherine, or whatever her name is, Caitlin, Catherine, or something like that. She's got a weird name, but then it's interpreted like the interpreter calls her Catherine, you know. Oh, there's this whole thing. She's got a disguise when she goes back. She's going to be called Isabel blah 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 from the north of England, and she has to look well off, you know, to have the clothes that she's got. And she's like, that is my identity that I'm going to have. And when the kid asks her, "What's your name?" she's like, "Catherine." Oh, messed it up. And then when they ask her name again, she's like, "Well, will I take on my other identity? Will I take on my real identity? What shall I tell them? And she just said, "My name's Catherine." It's like, you have no story now. You have no cover story. You just got to make it up as you go along. Like, all of the preparation, she just goes, "Fuck that. Doesn't matter. I'll just throw out all of that work that I did and all of the stuff. The whole identity that I had doesn't matter anymore. Why not? Just doesn't. Why not? Fuck it. Just, there's no reason." She's just like, "Oh, I've got this whole identity. I'll try and make it past. For some reason, I'll just call my name Catherine." And I'm just like, okay. Am I meant to? Anyway, and then the Doomsday Book sections where she's summarizing what she's doing, really short, all the way up until about now, and I'm like, wow, this summary is now, she's now going back over the same story and telling it in the same way. And then this person came in and I thought this, and then that person came in and I was like, no, just stick with the summaries. I wish I could just go through and just listen to the summaries, but now the summaries are getting as long and boring as the chapters themselves, so I don't understand. So that's the end of that. I think I'm going to give this book... because it's not just a book that I didn't like, it's a book that has, like, offended me in a way that other books haven't. You know, it's not just that it's Hunters of Dune, and it's not just that it's, like, lots of people like this book, like Snow Crash, and I didn't like it. You know, it's not like I just have a worse opinion of this book. This book actually gives... I know it's one of those weird things, but it actually diminishes my appreciation for human knowledge and art. It's one of those books that if people like this book... If there's anything about this book that people find interesting that they read through to the end, except I like it. If you've got a favourite author and a favourite author puts out a book, you'll read it no matter what, yeah? You've got some favourite authors that if they put out a book, you're not going to wait for the reviews, you're just going to buy the book and read the book.
Yeah.
I have authors like that. You know, like an Ian M. Banks culture book. If one of those comes out, I'll read it. You know, like, it's that kind of thing. Like, Alistair Reynolds, he puts out a book. Some of his books are pretty terrible. You know, others are very, very average. Some of them are amazing. But if a book comes out, you're like, I'm going to just do a punt. This book might be amazing. But if it's not amazing, you're going to give it, like, even if they're your favorite author, you're still going to give them a 3-star review. It's not going to be a 5-star review. This book is... deemed a classic somehow of something, I don't know, and it won the Hugo Award and it won the Nebula Award, and it's one of those things that, sure, they're your favorite author, does it mean that you have to, how does this book tie with A Fire Upon the Deep by Verna Vinci? Like, where, in what universe can I exist where these two books are held up as equal in any way, or an equal number of any population think these two books are equally worthy of an award? Like hominids, I understand hominids was a book written by a Canadian, and the World's Corner was in Canada. He was the guest of honor. That's what happens, you know. Like with Neil Gaiman. Neil Gaiman is a guest of honor at that Worldcon, so of course he's going to win the Hugo, because everyone who's going along there is to meet him, to see him, and they also get to vote on what book is going to win.
Yeah.
And because he's there, so he I understand. And it's probably a good book, you know. And I understand hominids. It's a fun. I mean, this is the thing about hominids. I said it's a terrible book. It's quite readable. There was never a point in this book where I thought, I'm never going to get to the end. Because each individual sentence and everything that was happening in each scene, even though it was, you know, not good, it wasn't tedious. It wasn't massively repetitive. This is massively repetitive, tedious shit. It's just shit storytelling in a way. So I'm going to have to give this, like, 0.1 stars. Like, not 0 stars... I had 2 attempts at this book, and the second time I hated it more than the first time, mainly because I realised it had won the Hugo and Nebula Award, and I was kind of like putting myself up for it. Connie Winnis also has another Hugo and Nebula Award book. It's not It's not one book, though. It's two books. She couldn't keep her length down, and she wrote a book which was so long that the publisher split it into two. And it was published as two books. And then it was for award season. It was recombined for award consideration, recombined into one book, and it won the Hugo Award and the Nebula. It's called Blackout, and the second book, All Clear. Another Hugo Award winner, another Nebula Award winner.
Will you read it?
No, fuck no. And this is the thing. This is the one thing. I'm going to do every other Hugo. I can't put myself unless everyone says this book is way better than Doomsday Book, but I've never heard that. Everyone said no, it's actually way too long and takes a long time to get through, and nobody has ever said, and it's set in the Blitz in London, in the bombing in the Second World War. So it's okay. Somebody going back and not doing anything interesting enough to affect the future in London with bombs falling around them, plus I'm sure some wacky adventures in modern day Oxford in the science history time travel department, and they're going to look on the watches and nobody's going to have mobile phones, or maybe now they will have mobile phones because this was written just 3 years ago or something. So anyway, do you have anything to add or any more questions about Doomsday Book?
It's quite fun to sit next to you when you do rants like that. It's loud.
It's not meant to be fun. I mean, this is one of the things that, like, normally when I read a bad book, I'm like, oh, I'm going to really love talking about this. I don't like talking about this book because I don't have anything of substance to say, except it's shit.
Okay, yeah, you said that many, many times now.
But
before.
I haven't said it as many times as Catherine in the book wonders if her interpreter is going to work. It's full chapters of her doing nothing except, I've got to get back to the drop. How will I do that if nobody understands what I say? Is my interpreter working? I don't think it's working. Is it going to work now? When this person says the next sentence, is it going to work? Now, maybe this sentence when they say something, is it going to work? No?
Okay.
No, and that maybe this sentence. Maybe this sentence my interpreter will work. How about you say something else?
Okay.
No, my interpreter is still not working. I wonder if it'll work when you say this is literally what I was listening to as the audiobook.
Okay, calm down.
Anyway.
Calm down. Maybe with the next book you should read, should be a very nice, relaxing book for
I know
you.
What I'm going to read. I'm going to read a book that I've read before already. You're reading Blindsight by Peter Watts. I'm going to read that as well, because that is actually a book that I read before. I think I gave it 4 stars or something like that. So why wouldn't I just read a book by an author who I know I like that I've read before? People go, I'd never read the same book twice. No, read the same book twice. You know that you're going to get something good. I mean, I knew that Doomsday Book wasn't going to be good because I've tried reading it before, but I thought, like I say, I thought it just wasn't for me. Anyway, it's not just not for me. It's not for everyone. It's a book which, I don't know. And again, it's one of those times sometimes when I read a bad book, I think, oh, this just needs a lot of good editing. Let's just edit this book and we could, you know, like Tobias Espichel, terrible writer, really fun stories and ideas. So you're thinking the characters are good, the story's good, the ideas are good, the science fiction good, there's a lot of adventure, but you just can't put a sentence together and his word choice is just terrible. And I'm only saying that because that was another book that I have his Hurricane Fever book to read, and I'll probably really enjoy it, except everything about the writing. He's not very good with English language. And you think, well, this just needs a good editor to go through there and actually, you know, put some of these words in the right order and fix the spelling, and it would be a good book. This book, there is no fan edit that I could do of this to fix the book, because it's not a thing. It's not a story. It's not a thing that has anything in it. Nothing in it.
I'm very, very, very sorry about that.
I know you're starting to yawn now. I'm repeating myself. Anyway, this is the part where I normally do an Audible advert, but I think I should just... No, they're not getting an advert this time out, because I spent one of my credits on Doomsday Book, and it's the credit that I've most regretted spending. Sometimes I'll get it and I'm like, oh, this isn't going to work out as an audiobook, and I think, oh, that was a whoops, I'll just read it as a paperback. But this time is one of those things that I'm just like, oh, and the narration is this woman who speaks like this and speaks like this all the time, and I'm just like, oh. But that's not the bad thing, you know. I said to you before, didn't I, that a bad narrator can, like, they can diminish my enjoyment of a book, but they can't ruin a good book. Like, Will Wheaton couldn't ruin the good stuff that was in Red Shirts. Like, there was some good stuff in there, and that stuff wasn't ruined by the narration.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
That makes sense.
And you mean a good narrator could...
Can make a bad book kind of more enjoyable just with the performances.
Yeah.
A good book with a good narrator is amazing. But this is a bad book with a bad narrator. But I don't even think a good narrator could have helped me. Because they would still be reading the same words from the book. And when it comes down to it, it's the words in the book which are the main problem. And unfortunately, it's 95% of all of the words in the book and the 5% that are left don't tell a coherent story and have just unpleasant characters. And so that's it. Anyway, that's the end of this review. Yeah, not doing Blackout and All Clear. Got now, after this book, I've got two more books to review. One of them I've finished, the last two Hugoulot Awards. One of them I finished by Isaac Asimov called The Gods Themselves, which I actually really enjoyed. That was a book that I started with an audiobook version, but I'll talk about that on the next episode when I do that. I started with the audiobook version, then switched to the ebook version. I'm glad I did, because the audiobook version wasn't that good.
Wasn't that the one from the cassette?
Yeah, it was one of the old books on tape version, and someone said on Goodreads, they said, hey, why don't you just get the Audible version? It's like, well, it's not there for me, you know, due to international rights management and Germany and book publishing and stuff like that.
You should get it while you're on sea, because sea here, you are like on
American. It doesn't really work like that. It turns out that my home address is in Germany and I have a German credit card. And so they're just like, no. But there was one which did become available. One of the E&M Banks ones I was wanting to finish off. What was the last one that we did? Not Surface Detail. Yeah, Surface Detail. Surface Detail. That what had never been available before, so when I wanted to listen to the audiobook, I had to pirate it. But now it's available on Audible. Even though I've pirated it in the past, and I had the ebook, I wanted to listen to the audiobook, so I still spend an Audible credit on a book once it becomes available. Does that make sense? Even though I pirated in the past, and I know I could just pirate it again, I want to spend my credits, I want to spend my money on your books, authors. So don't give away your audiobook rights in Germany to someone who will only put out a German version.
Yeah, don't do it.
Give the audio. Just say, okay, German audiobooks in Germany for this publisher, but the English audiobook rights in Germany for this other publisher. So we didn't do that. But yeah, it was a book on tape for The Gods Themselves. And it just, the quality wasn't great, and it was a bit difficult to listen to, and the narration really wasn't that great. And I got to this middle section. It's in three sections in the book, and the middle section just wasn't working as an audiobook, so I switched to the ebook. And it was much better, and I really enjoyed it then. Anyway, so yes, you can email me, luke@juggler.net. You can discuss this review and others on goodreads.com. You can just check out the SFBRP listener group there on goodreads.com. And you can comment on this review and other reviews. And there's a book suggestion list there as well if you want me to read a book. And I will read books that are suggested. For example, Armour by John Stakely. Oh, that was so bad as well. But I got through that one. Because it was short. It was only like 11 hours. Anyway, so follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. What do you want to say anything?
Nothing to say. If you really have anything that you want to put in for Ready Player One, put it in Goodreads.
Yeah, stick it on the Goodreads review there, and all your, and that's it. Suggestions for episode number 250, which at this rate, because we're on holiday, we're just doing nothing except reading books all day while we're on this cruise.
I'm making some progress with Judas and Chain.
We'll do a review of that as well. So I've actually got like this book finished now. Two of the books, one of the books that I've already finished, another book that we're going to do a review of that I'm not going to read, and then some other books. So it's going to be lots of, after the very thin summer of reading, we're going to get up to episode number 250 pretty quick here. Anyway, thanks a lot for listening. Say goodbye, Juliana.
Goodbye.
And I'll catch you next time.